making hay, a huge project on a farm when I was a kid, because dairy cows, in order to produce anything in the wintertime, you needed to have a good supply of hay. And we would grow on our 160-acre farm probably 30 acres of hay. And my dad would hitch the team, Frank and Charlie, to our moor and head out to the hay field and cut the hay. And then my brothers and I were faced with that onerous task of coming out there and piling the hay into bunches, or as they were sometimes called, hay cocks. And each of us had our own three-tine fork. You started by piling little pieces of hay, one layer on top of the other, and until it was probably 4 feet high or so. And you made it so it had a little cover on, a little top on it, so it would shed rain. And our father was a stickler. These hay bunches had to be made just right, and they had to be in straight rows. We were German. It was a thing to see, though, at the end of the day. There were hay bunches from one end to the other. We would often stand leaning on our forks, looking out over that field of hay. And my dad was not one to talk about things artistic, but he had a sense of it. And we looked out over that hay, and he would say something like, "Isn't that something?" And it was. It was something to see. And then when it was time to haul the hay to the barn, which would be a couple, 3 days later, once more we would hitch the team to the hay wagon and out to the field, and would pitch these hay cocks onto the hay wagon until there was an immense load of hay. And we would pull that load of hay up to the barn. And in the haymow, it was on a warm day in summer, maybe it was 85 outside, it'd be 110. In those days, my mother and dad made homemade Heyer's root beer. And my folks had a bottling machine and empty bottles. Tell you the truth, I think this was left over from Prohibition, but we didn't talk about that. And and these bottles of root beer, now we stored them down in the cellar. And the big treat, when we would bring up one of these huge loads of hay, my mother would come out to the wagon with a bottle of homemade Heyer's root beer, and it was wonderful. The 4th of July, when I was a kid, was a wonderful celebration because we would have a half day off. Pa said, "We can't afford to get away from haying for a whole day, but we'll work in the morning and we'll go to Silver Lake in the afternoon." And our mother would make a magnificent picnic lunch. We would drive to Silver Lake, and there under the pine trees, we would eat this big picnic lunch, and then my brothers and I would jump into Silver Lake for a swim. We did that every year. Lots of people there. Silver Lake was also a tourist attraction, and we always looked askance at all these tourists. You could spot them, no problem at all. A lot of them wore short pants. The farmer never wore short pants, the dumbest thing in the world. Scratch your legs all to the dickens. The fireworks were always at the lake in the evening, but we wouldn't go because we had the chores to do, milking to do and all the rest of it. So sometimes we would sit on our back porch. If it's a clear night, we could see the 5 miles or so to Silver Lake, and dimly on the horizon we could catch the fireworks. And then the next day it was back to work as it had been.
Gear lube on the truck, Rod?
Yes.
Threshing started after haying season, and everybody in our community had from 20 to 30 acres of oats. The threshing season began when Pa hitched the team to the grain binder. And it was a far more complicated machine than a mower because it had chains running this way and that. And bundles would come spewing out of the side of the machine. And we, again, my brothers and I, were faced with the task of standing up these bundles into shocks. If a grain shock fell down, then you were in trouble. They needed to withstand the wind, they needed to withstand the rain. The grain shocks would stand there for maybe a week, and on threshing day, oh, what a deal that was. Now, a threshing machine was the most complicated piece of equipment that ever came onto a farm. Belts and pulleys running in every direction. It was a wonderful machine. And once it began operating, it shook and the dust would fly. And we would invite all the neighbors to come. And some would come with teams in their wagons, and some would come as pitchers, and some would come as carriers. And at noontime, the whole crew would pile into the house, and my mother would have prepared a wonderful meal that was akin to Thanksgiving or Christmas. And what was also interesting is that the farm women all helped each other, but they competed with each other too. You just knew it was going on, because everyone wanted to be known as having the very best threshing meal. And some of them weren't that good. And when we would come to a farm where we knew the meal was not going to be a great meal, we would hurry everything up so we would get finished and get on to the next place. And if we knew that that farmer's wife had a really fine spread, we would slow everything down so that we might get an extra meal out of that place. And everybody knew that we were doing it. One of the moments that I remember most vividly, I was, 14 years old or so, is pitching bundles from the wagon into the machine. And it's a skill. You have to keep them in order. You can't put them in crossways. They've got to be same distance apart. And you're looking around always to where to catch the next bundle with your three-tine fork. And all the while, my dad is watching, because that was one of the most important days in my life, really, because the day that you were able to pitch off a load of bundles into a threshing machine is the day you moved from being a boy to a man. And my dad had this little smile on his face, and I knew when I finished and my arms ached and my back hurt, and it's a terribly hard work, that I had done it, and I've never forgotten that.